Welcome everyone to All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 220, recording this on 24th of June 2017. We have Mr. Rafe Blandford back with us.
Hello everybody. Yes, we're doing a Saturday morning recording. Steve is being very understanding on the timing, but we really wanted to get this one out and I wanted to get back in the recording seat. We've got our usual roundup of all the things that have been going on in the Windows mobile world. Lots of UWP apps to talk about that Steve's been reviewing on the site, and I'm sure we'll have our usual diversions. So welcome and thanks as ever for listening to the podcast. We look forward to sharing our thoughts with you.
Absolutely. And last week's guest was Tim Evans, so thank you very much to him for filling in again. But a whole litany of guests, really. Tim was almost Rafian in his responses, actually. Rafe, you could have a competitor there, but he was worth a listen if you get a chance to in some downtime this weekend, Rafe.
Brilliant. And yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate having all the guests on the show. It makes hopefully it makes for a more interesting podcast. It certainly makes my life a bit easier. And thank you for Steve for arranging a lot of that. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, they can just get in touch. Yeah. Isn't that right, Steve?
Absolutely. slitchfield@gmail.com. And yeah, thank you for your comments, people. Everyone's been loving the variety, as you've said, yet they still love you more than most, Rafe. So don't take this as a vote that they want you off the podcast. They enjoy it most of all when you're on, but they also enjoy some guests and some variety.
Gentle listeners, you are just too kind. I'm blushing bright red here.
Yes. So talking of the site itself, just thanks again to Joe Blumenau for a new version of AAWP Universal, our official Windows 10 mobile UWP app for the site, which has been updated yet again. More user interface tweaks, discuss comment improvements, and you can now donate in the app. Not donate to Rafe and I, but donate to Joe, and I approve this. I'm sure Rafe will approve it as well for all his hard work on the app. And the more people that buy him pints of beer, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you've been using this app, we'd really appreciate it if you would do this donation as by way of saying a thank you. And I just think, we're now up to version 1.5, as Joe refers to it. It's kind of almost the birthday or the anniversary release, kind of 1 year on from when it was first released. And it's, taking advantage of the Discuss API. Really brilliant in getting that functionality in place because, of course, it's more robust, more reliable, and giving you more information than the kind of previous approach. So actually, thank you also to Ryan at Discuss for helping with that. Hopefully you're enjoying using the app, and we know there's quite a few of you accessing the site that way as well. It's a really great way to consume the content. So, yeah, big thank you to Joe as ever. And if you haven't downloaded the latest version, or indeed horror above, you've never downloaded it, get cracking and have a look right now.
Absolutely. And people have asked, of course, in the past, Rafe, how can they donate to you or indeed myself? And I guess I have put a cheeky link to my own donation link just in case someone wants to bung me a pint of beer in that very story. And I assume, Rafe, if someone was to email you and say, Rafe, I love the fact that you're keeping the site going, can I send you a pint of beer? You wouldn't say no?
Well, maybe not a pint of beer, but yes, I'll be happy to do that. But yeah, and as I say, you've got a link to Steve Litchfield for the donation, so I'd encourage you to do that as well, because he's actually doing all the hard work on creating the content at the moment. So please consider doing that as well.
All right, anyway, enough of this chit chat. Let's move on with some new applications. I was quite impressed, Rafe, and this we may well come to some general discussion in a moment about some of the major internet services where there aren't first party applications, where this one developer, ChocoCode, I've no idea where he's based, but he's come up with over the last few weeks, and certainly they've been updated over the last few weeks, some major UWP Windows 10 applications for these services. So Flickr, that's Flicky, F-L-I-K-Y, AwesomeTube, obviously for YouTube, ZTwitch for Twitch, the game streaming service, Pinny, I haven't put this in the show notes, but P-I-N-Y for Pinterest. The same developer has produced these wonderful clients for phone, tablet, Xbox, laptop, tablet, whatever, Surface Studio. They run on everything, and they are effectively replace a first-party client. They're really, really slick and very well done. I was totally bowled over, and I've basically spent the week as a fan page to this one developer's UWP apps, because they're all for major services, Rafe, which I can't. I think highly recommended.
Absolutely. And I mean, I had a download of the Flicky app. I haven't actually tried out the other ones yet, but after seeing Steve's enthusiastic reviews, I'm definitely going to do so. I was just really impressed, because it's not just that it's nice to have access to these things. Of course, as Steve would always say, you can get kind of web versions, but you know, it just reminds me that well thought out apps, even if they don't necessarily follow the exact style of the kind of the brands or the companies in question, actually, if someone's created them consistently in a UWP way, actually you get the consistency on the platform. That's an interesting question in itself. You know, should apps follow the platform or the brand more? And actually, in this instance, I quite like the fact they're all consistent. It's just that feel of a UWP app. And actually, I'm not, in technical terms, don't actually have any particular insight into how these are done, but I'm suspecting they're using some of the kind of web-based component technology in order to do this very easily. Although having said that, there's clearly some a lot of work gone into the kind of specialist control. So I think it's a combination of that and consuming the APIs directly. So it's great that the services actually provide APIs that allow you to do this. I mean, there's obviously been trouble in the past with things like Twitter around that, but just, you know, the sheer level of functionality, you actually get an awful lot of what you want out of the app. And in some ways, you actually get, I would say, a clearer vision, because this person, whoever he is, as you say, has thought about, you know, the kind of key information he wants. So it's, I mean, you described it as you've been a fan page, but actually this is someone who obviously uses the service themselves and wants it just to be a good experience. So I guess particularly if you think about the Awesome Tube version of this, it's not necessarily going to have all the things that the official YouTube app has, but it's clearly someone who cares about it and cares about the experience on Windows 10 mobile or UWP in general. And they've just done a stunning job. And we've talked a bit about how there are fewer official apps around. But, you know, for those who are on Windows 10 mobile, and, you know, I suspect there are relatively few, you know, who are kind of really enthusiastic about and following very closely, for whom it's going to be their only device these days. I'm sure there are people who it's their only device who are maybe less smartphone obsessed, but you're able to get an awful lot of the really key applications, even if they're coming from a third party. And that's, you know, honestly, it's great to see. And I think the healthiness of the UWP scene has almost taken me a little bit by surprise, because I thought it would sort of wind back. I think it's probably testament to the fact that Microsoft has a lot of talented developers that use its technology on its platform and are probably looking for side projects, maybe outside of work or to do something a bit interesting. And it's a very obvious candidate for this. And, you know, in one sense, I suspect it's somewhat inadvertent, but it really reinforces Microsoft's UWP strategy and the thinking behind that, in that they're getting applications onto their mobile platform, which, we have to be honest, you know, does not have anything like the number of users as the other platforms, and, you know, in consumer terms is definitely ebbing away. But because they've kind of got that link, they're seeing some fantastic apps. And, you know, if you're following along on AAWP or any of the other Windows sites, you will see these apps appear and be updated. There's something new to try on your phone. And I think for a lot of us, actually just trying out a new app or having a go with something new is really kind of one of the things that, you know, it just drives the interest in the platform, drives motivation. So fantastic to see these appear. So, yeah, really big credit to Chococode. Great to see. I mean, Steve, of these, I suspect that the YouTube one might be your favorite, just from a personal point of view, because I know you watch quite a bit of YouTube, as we all do. Probably not so much a big Twitch user. But, yeah, I mean, what's your view? I mean, is it great to see this kind of indie industry going on in the UWP space?
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right that Awesome Tube is my favourite of these. I mean, there's Perfect Tube, there's MyTube, both of which are actually pretty excellent YouTube clients in their own right. And I didn't think they'd be better, but Awesome Tube does take all of that and goes better than them, and goes better than the official Google YouTube application for Android and iOS. I think it adds extra features beyond all of those. It's quite amazing. It includes a YouTube downloader, you know, video downloader, which I know is technically frowned upon by Google, but various clients seem to get away with it these days. And it is handy to archive, you know, videos for offline playback. So, and that's all included out of the box. And you get background audio, where if you're just using YouTube for music, which a lot of people do, you don't have to have all the bandwidth of the video coming over your cellular connection and also tying up your screen. You just say, okay, well, I want this music video. You set the quality stroke resolution to audio, and it just grabs the audio, and then you, and it will then pass it to the standard audio playback controls in the Windows phone, Windows 10 phone, and you then get on with something else, a different application, or perhaps turn the screen off and enjoy the music coming from YouTube in the background via Awesome Tubes. It's just really, really, very clever indeed.
Yeah, really clever.
Yeah, amazing. This does lead me on to a general discussion, Rafe. This is right up your street in terms of your day job, Monday to Friday, so I apologise for that, but you will have insights here. In terms of applications and services, how they're used differently on different form factors. So let's take, for example, Flickr. If I was to go to Flickr and I was at my MacBook or my Windows 10 PC, my Surface Pro, whatever, I would go to Flickr.com and I would use their web interface, which typically runs, I might have a 1080p screen, for example, nice and large, probably 11-inch, 13-inch display, and I'll be very happy, and I'll be using the full Flickr experience as a website, I using HTML5, JavaScript on the web. If I wanted to go to Flickr on a phone, I mean, I might have an iPhone, for example, I would download the Flickr app. There wouldn't be any question whatsoever of going to Flickr.com and Safari and trying to muddle through that way. I'd go for the application. Ditto for Twitch, for example. Ditto for YouTube. Just use some of the examples from this week. And it begs the question, where is the crossover? Where's the transition? Why is it people don't use applications on the desktop? We've got this Windows 10 store, and we've all got Surface Pros probably, or Windows 10 laptops around. And when we want to do something, YouTube. When you want to watch a YouTube video on your Surface Pro, Rafe, I bet you don't boot up a YouTube client. You just go to YouTube.com in Edge and or Chrome, whatever browser you prefer, and you'd watch it there. So at what point in the whole pantheon of devices and form factors does the switchover happen where people think, no, I don't want to go via the web, I want to go via an application? Is it purely down to platform? Is it down to physical screen size? What's your thoughts?
It's a really great question, this. To my mind, there's kind of two big things here, one of which is just there's a legacy. So on the desktop, we're kind of used to using the browser as kind of the app to access lots of other things. And on mobile, we've kind of been used to apps for a long while, especially when mass market. I mean, the early days of mobile, okay, there weren't hundreds of that. But when we talk about the smartphone becoming really popular, the idea of the app store and things was just popularized. And it's interesting to think about. I can't really see, you know, if you look back in history, a really good reason for it. I mean, I would point out there are places where kind of the access to services on mobile are a little bit different. A good example is the way kind of WeChat has become one app to rule them all in China. And it's not unusual to access even other apps or just entire service and functionality through that. I mean, you can sort of see Facebook doing the same in our world, but maybe not quite such an extreme example. But the fact that things like Facebook and to an extent Instagram and Twitter are the most popular apps and people access a lot of content through that, you know, to the detriment perhaps of standalone content or newspaper apps, you can see that sort of pattern. But that doesn't really answer your original question. The other big factor for me is I think this is about constraints. And so on the desktop, you refer to the 1080p screen or the big screen, lots of space. And so, you know, you don't have to arguably think quite so much about how you're going to lay out the UX and the experience. And it's a very well understood problem. And there's lots of experience in doing that. Whereas if you think about mobile, you do have more constraints. And partly that's about screen resolution. And so you have to be much more careful with the way you design UX, or rather you are having to deal with additional constraints. And I might give you a simple example. Think about navigation. You can put kind of a nav bar at the bottom maybe, or a burger menu in the top left-hand corner, or however you choose to do it. Actually, the first of those is great because you don't hide anything away, but it limits the number of options that you can have, and quite often you end up with a more button. The burger menu is a kind of the alternative design pattern. But actually, you know, in testing, we find that anything that's hidden away, people are less able to access. And you contrast that with the web, where, of course, most of those links are out in the open. It's quite a, if I can call it, a flat or non-layered UX, whereas in apps, we do tend to have the layers. And a lot of that's around a result of the constraints that you have on the smaller screen. But there's more to it than that. It's also about performance. So, for example, when you look at any app, when it's operating over a 4G connection or even 3G, the latency and the time taken will just be a little bit more than if you're doing it on a website. And that's why I think typically people will prefer an app over a web experience. Now, there are things coming that kind of help address that, not just 5G networks, but, you know, the rise of progressive web apps and kind of service workers that basically try and do more offline or try to do more processing locally. So that will change. And actually, I think there, if anything, we've seen a move to people being happier to use the web on their mobile devices in recent years. The usage stats don't necessarily bear that out, but that comes back to the legacy comment I made earlier. People have got used to doing things via apps, and so that's the way they expect to do it. And that's very much driven by a very obvious kind of app layout grid. And I think that's the other factor to consider. You know, apps are just easier to consume on mobile devices than they are on desktop. They both have kind of, if you like, different architectures, the way they were put together from very early on. And that's just the way it is. You know, this debate or this question, you know, could go quite a bit further. But if I was trying to summarize it, I would say, the experience on browser on the desktop is good enough for 90% of people for accessing these services that we're talking about. That together with the legacy of, you know, apps not really having a history for these kind of smaller interactions. Apps have always been about big productivity actions, not small tasks that the web grew up to serve. Whereas on mobile devices, good enough in the browser is actually more difficult to achieve because of those constraints I talked about. And therefore, the experience in apps is better, plus the legacy of apps always having been there on mobile. That's what I think creates that divide. And I mean, you've actually referred to this a couple of times. Why would you start the UWP app on desktop when you can just go into the browser? Because the experience isn't that much of a difference. It's just fine on the browser. You turn that around the other way on the mobile device and you go, there is a noticeably different, you know, there's an uplift in the experience. So good enough looks different on mobile than it does on desktop. Partly the legacy, the history I'm talking about, partly the constraints and the performance.
Yeah. I mean, you made a great point there, right in the middle. I just want to emphasise that, which I hadn't thought about before, was that not just performance, but latency. When you've got a mobile application, if there's certain resources, graphics come to mind, obviously, but there are other sections of code, sections of logic, which can be stored locally and processed locally without needing extra cellular accesses and downloads and so forth. If you're doing it by the browser, apart from any browser caching, you're basically reliant entirely on your connection speed and your connection latency. And you're absolutely right. But this comes to mind, especially in the foreground, for things like online banking, where you've got an online banking app, say Lloyds Bank or Barclays. The application is doing an awful lot of the heavy lifting and the packaging of your experience from local resources actually on your phone. It don't have to be grabbed every time. So, and also it means your phone bill's less than your connection bill, or your cap is less troubled at the end of the month because you've used less data, because more things have happened locally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in one sense, we're oversimplifying a bit, because particularly with performance, there's things you can do on the web, and I refer to progressive web apps, but also you can bundle resources together, you know. But the general principle would be it's much easier to be more efficient on mobile apps, and actually to the extent you can even chunk things up or decide at sometimes when, you know, you're not having a very good connection, you might try and do more things locally or use the cache locally more. And actually, there's a whole point there. Actually, a lot of apps can work offline completely, which of course you can't do with a web. And so when you're on a mobile device and you're out and about with variable connectivity, so until we get ubiquitous connectivity, that's always going to count against kind of web apps that require a constant connection as well. And so, yes, I do think that's important. And actually, performance takes on more dimensions than that, because it can also be to do with storage and the processing you were talking about. And at the moment, most of our computing infrastructure is kind of, in one sense, centralized. There isn't a lot of processing on the edge of the network. And that's a deeper topic that we'll come back to in a future podcast. But I think that does favor apps on mobile in particular. But it's a really interesting topic, because some of it makes me think, and particularly when you see a really good web app experience, and particularly some of the new progressive web apps, and if you don't know what they are, probably the way to explain them is they're more of a hybrid between apps and the traditional web apps that we're used to, you know, things like phone gap, or even just web apps that run in the browser. And these things called service workers basically allow some of the intelligence to be shifted from happening on the web server to happening locally on your device. And particularly for e-commerce and retail sites, some of those transactional things can work very well. For ones where you're consuming content, maybe it's less interesting, and for certain other types of apps, you know, some things are always going to be done locally. It's a really great question, actually. And I think it's going to extend further than this, of course, because we're seeing kind of the idea that you can consume the stuff that we're used to getting in apps and browser elsewhere. And sometimes that'll be inside another app with an extension. Sometimes that'll be on a personal assistant, whether that's on the device or in a smart home speaker or something else. And digital assistants are going to come in and change this again. So I've seen in the last few years kind of web kind of push back against apps a little bit. And you know, you think of things like React Native, for example, and a lot of the frameworks, you know, the early ones, and I'm thinking more kind of maybe things like PhoneGap here or Titanium, you know, they've always been there, but they never really got loads of mass market adoption. You didn't see these kind of framework apps dominating the top 10 in the apps or even the top 100. But actually something like React Native, which takes a slightly different approach, is coming back. And obviously that they are still local native apps, but it's kind of speaking towards web technology, making a bit of a resurgence, and particularly progressive web apps, as I say. That's interesting. I'm still somewhat skeptical in the longer term, bigger picture, because the other thing we haven't touched on here, of course, Steve, is that sometimes the things you can do in local, you just can't do on the web. The browser has always typically been 3 or 4 years behind kind of native apps in access to some of the internal APIs and the libraries. If you go back a long way, you know, it was actually quite unusual to have the browser access the GPS. Now that's kind of standard. No one would think anything about that. You know, even things like the accelerometer, that's easy to access. And there's, you know, in web apps, you can access more and more of these functionalities through kind of modules or by plugins, so things like Bluetooth or NFC. You're starting to see the way you can actually do basic VR in the browser as well. And even, I would say, even not basic, you know, with things like WebGL or WebVR, you know, that's coming in. But there will always be things that are sort of a bit further out. You know, the APIs that Google announce, IO or Apple announce at WWDC, they will be available first in native apps, and they will probably be best there for quite some time. And so that's the other reason I think apps are favored on mobile devices. They're just going to be more capable than the equivalent web experience.
Yeah, yeah. There's other factors, of course. Biometrics springs to mind. I've been using, for example, things like on Android phones, I've got PayPal and online banking, obviously very, very sensitive applications. And you can actually, they link in now the fingerprint sensor. So, for example, yeah, on a typical iPhone or Android phone, you can literally open it, tap on the PayPal icon, and it says, please authenticate. You tap your finger on the fingerprint sensor, and you're in. And that, compared to the loops you have to go through trying to do that via the web, is ridiculously more convenient for the user. So I think that's another big factor, and that will always favor applications.
And that's a great example of what I was just talking about, in that kind of biometrics haven't really got into the browser yet. Actually, Microsoft has sort of started talking about it.
Yeah, with Hello.
Apple Pay, you can actually use a fingerprint to do a payment, but not for kind of identification or authentication. Do I think that will come in iOS 12 or maybe in iOS 11? We haven't heard about it yet. Absolutely, you will be able to use biometrics in the browser, but that's to the point I was making. It will be a couple of years behind, and no doubt there will be some other new feature that you'll only get in an app, and that does make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take an example. I'm fascinated on this topic. Right? Pinterest, I'm not a big Pinterest user, but it makes a great example. Something which, if you ask 100 Pinterest users out there in the UK, 99 of them probably will say that they first came across this Pinterest service on the web, in their web browser, on their laptop or PC, maybe even on the tablet. Since then, they've gone out and they found that most mobile platforms, even now Windows 10 Mobile, thanks to this new client, have got applications, and that also works pretty well. But I'd still argue that you actually need a desktop-sized screen for the full Pinterest experience. But if you then look at this Pantheon, as I mentioned earlier, going down from a laptop PC. Let's say, Rafe, I take away your laptop PC. Let's say you're a big Pinterest user and you're into your arts and crafts. You're then on your Surface Pro. And that's, what is it, a 10, 11-inch screen, something like that. What would you use there? Would you think, well, it's not quite convenient. I think I'll go looking for a Pinterest application. Or you'd still be pretty happy on a Surface Pro size screen, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, yes, I think web down to certainly 10-inch and tablets interesting because that feels like a hybrid. But most of the time, or at least a lot of the time, I think tablets behave more like computers. There maybe is a cutoff with the kind of the mini size tablets, which is 7 inches. And once you get onto the phone, yes, apps absolutely take over. I think that's partly dependent on the platform. So for the iPad, you've got a lot of the apps. Android's kind of maybe a mix of the two, and obviously on Windows, typically it is going to be full desktop Windows. And of course, with UWP, you do have access to the app, so it's kind of the most interesting platform to consider because you have a bit more choice there. Arguably, the apps are less mature, less available, it's kind of less understood, and I think that's a problem in that people don't know necessarily about the apps that they could have access to, and so maybe there's a bit of an education thing. But I'd also just suggest Pinterest is interesting to talk about. I mean, you talked about, of course, it has to be on the browser. I think that probably reflects your history and, you know, your position, if you like. You know, you come from a browser first mentality, but I think a lot of people using Pinterest started using it on a phone to start with, and they kind of almost use it like a scrapbook, and actually just doing a long vertical scroll or swiping through to see the different things they've collected is something they're entirely used to. I mean, when you're doing the big review, I mean, I would agree with you, having it on a big screen and being able to see all your pins. I mean, think of it in the kind of the metaphor that Pinterest uses, everything on a pin board and being able to pick out the stuff that's of interest to you, whether that's for home furnishing, fashion, collection of tech toys, whatever it might be. But there's an interesting caveat here, of course, in that the way you add things to Pinterest is often you're consuming content elsewhere. You spot something and go, oh, I'd like to save that in some way and actually read it later. And a lot of those other services are the same. Of course, on the mobile platforms, you've got the sharing built in a way that people really readily understand because they use it a lot. And it may exist elsewhere. And actually, it's not difficult to do a copy and paste or a share on the desktop platforms, but it's not quite so intuitive, or rather, it's not an established familiar behavior. So, you know, anyone on mobile knows that, you know, you're looking at a photo or whatever or a web page, you can kind of do the share and get it into Pinterest in just one or two taps. Particularly if you're a regular user, it's likely to be one of your shortcuts, one of the really favorites. And so for Pinterest, I think actually that's why people would use the Pinterest app, for that collecting process, for the actual reviewing and browsing of what you've collected. Arguably a bigger screen is better, but, you know, as I say, I think they're probably used to using it in that format. And that's kind of the big thing that we have to remember. The mobile device is now the dominant one. It is most people's first computing platform. For a lot of people, it's their only personal one. And so they may not even necessarily have access to that bigger screen, or at least not on their own computer. It will be shared. And so that very personal thing around content and the apps and the services you use, mobile first, and, you know, apps kind of lend themselves to that. And actually, you know, talking about that sharing framework, that's another thing that the web just doesn't do quite so well, that integration between apps. So the ability to deep link and move from one app to another, it does exist on the web, of course, but it doesn't feel quite so seamless, and it's not something people are quite so used to. Whereas the idea that you might be looking at something in a Flickr app or on a bit of content app, and the idea that you might be able to share that out or copy it into Pinterest in some way, I think is probably quite well established. And so, yeah, I hadn't thought about it, but there's another difference for you.
Yeah, all of this comes into relevance, of course, but the underlying subtext here is that why don't more manufacturers, more developers, why don't they produce more UWP apps for Windows 10 applications for their services? And the answer is that they think, well, okay, we're 95. Yes, Windows 10 is a big user base. There's 500 million people using Windows 10, but 95% plus of these users are actually using them on PC-sized screens or tablets. Therefore, they're perfectly happy in Edge, the browser, or Chrome, if they like. So why do we need to bother to do a separate application? And that's, you can understand their point of view there, I think.
Yes, you can, absolutely. And often these decisions will be driven by what's the return on investment going to be.
Yeah.
I guess it comes back to that good enough comment that I made earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to mention, I did put up a tutorial in the week, which I thought was interesting because I had a kind of a frequently asked question, really, with people saying that some applications, usually the old Windows Phone 8.1 apps, Silverlight based off, and they're getting withdrawn by companies simply because they're old and they're not being developed anymore. And the companies think, we don't want to support them. If people email us saying we've got a problem, we don't want to deal with this, it's old, so we're going to withdraw it. So it does, then doesn't appear in store listings, but quite often, not always, but quite often you can actually get that back because it still remains on Microsoft servers. And if you go in via, as I said in my tutorial, if you go in via the store and then my library, if you like, and within there that's broken down into apps and games, then you can drill down. It takes a while. If you're Steve Litchfield and you've installed 10,000 apps over the last 2 years, it takes quite a while to download that list. But once you've downloaded it, you can swipe through and you'll find stuff there that you installed back in, say, 2012, 2013, four or five years ago. And quite often those things still have a download icon next to them and you can still download them and they still run. In my case, I was trying to get hold of Flight Radar, which has been withdrawn as a as an application because you can now use it via the Edge browser. But I like the application. And lo and behold, it was in my list. I downloaded it and it runs absolutely perfectly, Rafe, even though it's not available in store search. And quite a few people have found success with this route. I just thought this was an interesting tip and maybe there's something in your past that you can actually bring back on modern devices, even though you can't find them with a search in the store.
Yeah, it's a great tip. I mean, I hadn't thought about it in that way because I've often used my collection just as an easier way to find things I've downloaded rather than going through the search process. But yeah. I suspect many people don't even think about this My Library and the fact it isn't a way to do this. And I hadn't quite appreciated that it meant you could get things that had otherwise been withdrawn. I mean, in one sense, it's a bit frustrating because you think things are being withdrawn and are working perfectly okay. And as you said, maybe it's a financial or political reason for doing this, but it's worth a try. It's worth saying it won't work for every app, and sometimes it will download, but there'll be something else missing on the back end that means it doesn't operate perfectly. But yes, absolutely worth a go if you've got one of these older apps that you want. Just bear in mind that particularly with the old ones, there may be something that's now missing that means it's unstable for whatever reason. So, you know, yes, you'll get a successful install, but you need to use it a bit first. But yes, interesting to see something like Flight Radar 24, which I imagine could be quite a popular app. It's kind of frustrating to see that not more readily available.
Yeah, but again, then again, it does work very, very well via the web, and all the previous comments apply, I think, in that case. But yes, I'd love to see a full UWP client for that, because once a day, my family asks me, where's that going to? As yet another plane goes over my head. We live quite close to Heathrow Airport, so there's quite a lot of opportunity for airliner spotting, shall we say. In terms of tracking down old applications, I was very excited to see the existence of Tiger Woods Golf. I thought, wow, I used to love Tiger Woods Golf back in the Windows Phone 7.8. Was it days 2012 2013 one of my favorite games for Windows Phone, and it kind of installed, but then it crashes and it burns and the graphics are all glitchy, and there are architecture problems and the technology has moved on and it's things, games particularly, are not necessarily 100.0% compatible with modern Windows 10 mobile. But I had a nice try, and at least I got my Flight Radar app working. But look in the comments on that story if you're listening to this, because there are several other examples of apps that people have brought back from the dead. Very finally, before we go, Spotify, I'm sure you can comment on this, Rafe, as an industry watcher, has now become a Windows 10 store app, but only on PC. Basically, they use the Project Centennial system to take the Spotify Win32 client and convert it to a store app, which is very important for things like Windows 10S and a packaged version of Windows 10 going forwards, maybe even Windows 10 on ARM back in the in the future. But if you're on Windows 10 mobile, do not panic, because there is a UWP app following the theme of this show, this Spottycast. This kind of cheats, right? This is interesting. I don't know whether you've had a look at the Spottycast story or even the app, but as far as I can tell, it takes your Spotify playlists and using your Spotify account. So it has all the information on what you like, what you listen to, what your playlists are, but it actually sources the music itself, not from Spotify servers, which would be a complete flagrant disregard for Spotify's IP. It grabs the music from YouTube and other video streaming services, which has the advantage or that you can actually get, in some cases, you can get the videos playing in the background behind the UI of the music you're browsing, which sounds really weird, but so you're browsing through the description of an album track, for example, and behind the text and the information of the artist is the actual artist performing it live in the background of the UI with using this kind of transparent interface design. It's really bizarre, but a lot of people have found this works for them. It's not a full Spotify client per se, but it's a very interesting hybrid.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't quite appreciated that was the way it works, so I guess I'm going to have to go and try this out. It sounds like there may be some legal implications for how that all works, but let's sort of gloss over that for the time being. But yes, I mean, it's interesting to see the kind of Centennial desktop bridge being used in this way by Spotify. I mean, I would always say, yeah, of course, there's a preference for doing the UWP app properly, and especially as we're biased, and that means it's more likely to arrive on mobile. Kind of bad news for Spotify official, at least on Windows 10 mobile. But I guess, you know, actually the priority there is probably to have it. You mentioned Windows 10S. I think that's absolutely right. So I'm going to download Spottycast and give it a go, because I'm sure there's plenty of Spotify premium subscribers who've got the Windows 10 mobile devices and want to be able to access their music, or at least the playlists, and even if the music is sort of coming from somewhere else.
Yeah, it's kind of a magic trick. You have to work out how they've done it. as it grabs each track, and there's a slight delay while it presumably contacts YouTube and grabs the appropriate feeds and strips out the appropriate headers, and then finally there's the music. So it's not quite seamless, but it's an interesting trick, and you do get a few extras along the way. So yes, another UWP app that's worth supporting, worth paying for. There are plenty of them. I think we'll call a halt to it there, Rafe. It's a Saturday and we've both got things to do, but it's not great chatting to you, and who knows who will be on the podcast this time next week.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll see what happens next week. We will do our best to deliver another podcast, but as ever, thank you for listening, and big thank you to Steve for marshalling the content and the podcast this week.
And yes, apologies for Rafe's frog in his throat. He's had a very busy week at work, no doubt talking for 11 hours a day about applications and the industry. So do have a restful weekend, Rafe, and we'll catch you next week.
I certainly aim to. Thanks, Steve.
Bye.